Wednesday, December 20th. This will, I think, be forever a strange week in my memory. It is to be our first Christmas in the White House. There is a party every day. Monday, the press party, the ladies. Tuesday, the underprivileged children. Today, about 1,000 government officials, grades 16 to 18. Thursday, the party for the children of everybody that works at the White House. And Friday, the annual staff party. The old house is bursting at the seams with merriment planned weeks in advance. And strange counterpoint, my husband is on the other side of the world on a trip that sprang into being only a few days ago as a result of the tragic death of Prime Minister Holt of Australia sometime Saturday. When he is gone, the whole tempo of the White House changes. It is as though it were waiting, biding time for his return. And I do all those things I put aside. But call me a little after 12 o'clock from Air Force One, I believe, to ask how the rocking chair interview with the president had gone. I'd watched it, did not come up to the press conference of November the 17th, or to the labor speech in Florida. The script was excellent. It was a little slow. It needed a little more humor, a little more passion. There was one exceptionally good moment where he turned to Frank Reynolds and said, "What would you do, Frank?" I'm afraid my description to him was a little disheartening. His absence makes me slack. I did not dress until 11:30, though I worked in my room. Vignettes of the day. A $10,000 check from Mrs. Meriwether Post for the beautification committee, proudly brought in by Liz. Trip Christmas shopping with Linda, Saks. I bought a pretty blue sweater for Pat. People recognized me, but it was not difficult. In fact, it was fun. Steak sandwich in the solarium with Linda and Chuck. How I do enjoy them. Working with Liz on captions for the album to give to Lyndon for Christmas. And then the main event of the day, the reception for government officials. Just before it began, I went downstairs to receive, along with Bill Wirtz and Jane, Secretary John Gardner, a Christmas wreath presented on behalf of 12 formerly unemployed men who are now being trained as nurserymen at a skill center in Detroit. We hung it on the front door of the White House while I listened to the secretaries tell how this course was started, how all the 65 or so graduates had gotten jobs as soon as they had completed the course. One of the cheering little success stories that make Lyndon's 12 o'clock nights worthwhile, and all the other folks too. With Lyndon gone, the party had suddenly lost a good deal of its sparkle. So we had asked Cubitt to stand in line with me and had invited all of the cabinet to come and mix and mingle and help entertain. Cubitt and I took up our positions in front of the beautiful Christmas tree, sparkling with icicles and gay with gingerbread cookies and ropes of popcorn and bright felt flowers. And then they came, 1,021 strong. Sometime I'm going to write a little piece about my life and times in the receiving line. Funny, pathetic, sweet things happen. Suddenly, in the drone of repeated greetings and faces filing by, there in front of you is a man with no legs, on a board with rollers down close to the floor, and only one arm. You hope your face does not show shock or dismay as you lean over to greet him and see that the hungry cameras are taking this picture more than any other. And finally, in the line of the anonymous, there is a familiar face from the past. You grapple for a name. It comes, Brisbane, the NYA, but no first name. And he does not supply it. And then, inevitably, there is the big, ebullient guy who says, "I'm a friend of Charlie Thompson's. You know Charlie." I don't, but I am saved as the line bears him away. But mostly, this particular receiving line was a picture of what makes up our government. It was very interesting. There were only about 1% of them women. There were lots of Jews, a sizable number of Negroes, cordial, quite at ease, a long climb from only one decade ago, and just one Latin American name all evening. And there were lots and lots of Jews. At first I found myself trying to say, "I hope you have pleasant holidays," to them, but pretty soon I was saying "Merry Christmas" to Dr. Goldberg and Mr. Abraham, along with the rest of them. There were ever so many doctors. In the high echelons of government, a PhD is a very valuable thing, apparently. It was interesting to see the cabinet members that had turned out. Along with John Gardner and the Wirtzes, faithful Jane and Orville Freeman were there, and the incredible Dean Rusk. How can he have the time? I ran into both Lee and Stu Udall in the East Room after the line was over, and I think I glimpsed the Allen Boyds and the attractive young Frobridges. About twice I stopped the line so that Hubert and I could have a respite, a sip of drink and a little visiting with each other. Greeting 1,000 people is work, but I regard it as a very brief span in my life. Just possibly it means something to some of these 1,000, so I want to give them at least a pleasant personal greeting to take away as a memory. Made the rounds of the room when the line was over. And then a little past 7:30, went upstairs to the West Hall, found Linda and Chuck, and Marilyn Walsh still hard at work and almost in tears because pictures planned for Linda's album she was helping her had not been finished. I said, let's all relax and have a drink. Marilyn takes her work very seriously, and I like that. She's becoming more and more a part of our lives. I called a car to take her home. This is the first time I've really been with Linda and Chuck since they returned from their honeymoon. And I was delighted, and shall I say relieved, to find Linda so full of humor and ease, reminiscing about the wedding, saying, you might call this show The Agony and the Ecstasy. She was going on about somebody's a failure to do their job efficiently to Chuck, and he intervened, quite sagely, I thought, saying, I'm not going to get you out of this one until I know the facts. I think he's getting off to a good start. Then we had dinner, Linda and Chuck and I recorded, and at 10 o'clock, Chief Dawson came up. I settled in the complete pleasure of getting a massage while I watched A Christmas Memory and Gunsmoke on videotape, and to bed by 11:30. The papers had headlined, LBJ in Australia, Security Tight. And in spite of all the busy day, that feeling persisted of being suspended, waiting for his return. Oh yes, if I ever write that little bit about my adventures in a receiving line, here's another item. After the receiving line was over and I was in a group, I looked up and suddenly bearing down upon me was a jovial friend of Charlie Thompson. I could not escape. He cornered me and began to talk about Charlie. Sure, you remember Charlie, that big Texan. Alas, I could not, and I hate deflating people. I murmured lamely that my husband knew so many more people than I did. I was sure Charlie must be a friend of his.